You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
So the book, Mix It, It's All of Us, is it's a celebration of what we've done over the last 12 years. So it's a real window into the context that we created this work for, the history of it, and the model of practice, all our values and foundations, but it's also full of lots of voices. So it's got contribution and voices from young people, artists, their mothers, from that personal lived experience, alongside my voice that's got all of the information. And it's also packed with photographs, because Mix It is a very visual, very vibrant project, and we've got a huge archive of images that myself and Ella Beecroft have taken over the years. Visual storytelling is such a powerful thing, so I knew that that had to be a big element of the book. So yeah, it's bristling with beautiful full-colour photographs that just leap out, and people just, that's the first impression you get when you open the book, is my gosh, look at this visual journey.
And so for those who don't know, what is Mix It?
It's a community development project that uses creativity to support young people from former refugee and migrant backgrounds. Young people that are sort of settling and have settled, perhaps been here for quite a while even, in some instances, here in Auckland. And we run a range of programs that use some of the core creative elements of dance and drama, storytelling, music. On a weekly basis, we run free creative workshops every Saturday all year, and then big summer projects where we actually create performance. And there's a youth leadership program that wraps around all the work we do. And now that we've been going for quite some time, we have this growing group of alumni that just remain connected and contributed in some way. But they're older now, but they still remain part of the whānau, which is really great. So it's about using creativity as a vehicle to help young people become stronger and more able to navigate their way forward. And it's also about a really beautiful combination of bringing all the difference together. So bringing the former refugee, the migrant, and some of the local backgrounds together, and crossing those barriers that divide so often, and just making this really strong, safe platform where young people can come together and support each other and be guided with some really great inspirational guidance. And it's about communication and connection and socialization and sharing in a really inclusive, non-judgmental space, which a lot of the young people we work with don't have that, actually, a lot in their lives. And they don't have necessarily a lot of stability. And they're struggling often with the very slippery ask of being from two places and yet not quite being from either of them. So whether the family's country of origin or here in this new settled, this community where they're settling. And they just have to juggle this multiplicity of identities wherever they go, and often not necessarily with the most understanding or appropriate guidance and networks around them. So there's a lot of propensity to make some wrong choices or not get onto it and create a great future as strong as they could. So we use the creativity to support them because it's a really powerful vehicle.
You just brought up how they don't necessarily have the best guidances around them.
Yes, mostly. I mean, mostly because often, you know, in this age and era that we're living in, the world is going so fast. There's a very big, often, gap between where parents are coming from and where their teenagers are, what their teenagers are living. They're very different worlds. And if you've got parents that come from somewhere else, they often really just don't understand what young people, the lived experience for young people, what they're coping with, what they're up against, what they're having to deal with. Their parents just don't understand. Not always, of course, but often. And also, we get very used to locals of having all kinds of support networks and introductions into workplaces or people we can go to get some really good guidance about choices, whether it's study choices or career choices or life choices. Some young people from refugee and migrant backgrounds don't have that same kind of support. So they're forging their own way, and often in it can be not as successful or a little inappropriate, or it falls and fails. And, you know, we all need to do our bit to make stronger communities as we move forward together. And our communities are really exploding in terms of becoming more multicultural and diverse. The world is getting, you know, more merged, if you like. And it's not a matter of that not happening, because it is going to happen. It is a reality of the world that we live in, the movement of people. And we have to get better at how to make stronger, more empowered communities that aren't divisive and full of tension and threat. And we see how that's manifesting out there around the world in not great ways. I like to believe that we are a small enough and caring enough community that we can take this on and grow and expand and accommodate and embrace and celebrate what we're becoming.
So just jumping back to the book as well, I noticed there's like a lot of quotes from the youth within it, and a lot of their work, as in like poetry that they've written and then performed. How important was that for you in having those voices?
Oh, key, at the heart and centre of it. Everything we do, young people, we have to do it with, not for. It's about working. When you work with young people, if you don't bring them and work really closely with them and create a space that's all about them, that they own, that they are instrumental in making it work, well, it's never going to work. You know, the young people will run a mile, but it's always been important to us. Everything we do as an organisation, young people are involved in making the decisions, being there. And when we get when we're looking at planning another creative course or bringing a guest artist in, or we get increasingly a lot of invitations to reach out and get involved in wider organisations, initiatives, the first question we all have to check, including with the young people, is what's in it for the mixers? What's in it? Is there anything in it? If there's not, nah, why would we do it? So that's where our Youth Leaders Program and our alumni are really active, and they're including, they're right up to being on the board. So that voice of young people is just integral to everything we do. So to write a book without having young people's personal reflection all the way through it was never going to not happen.
Is there anything else you want to make a comment about?
Just that it's really important, I think, as a community, that especially now we have this new Labor government and they have committed to doubling the refugee quota, which is great, needs to happen. But equally, what has to happen is that we have to get better as a community, as a society, of really understanding the long-term implications of resettling people into our communities, and that we all need to be part of that. And it's all about, we've got to get better at socialisation and connectivity and communication. There's a lot of focus on upfront arrival, first stage of people coming in, and then that tapers off.
I then spoke with Brooke Scheifra, who was involved with Mixit's early development as a volunteer and as someone with a refugee background. She told me about the struggles of refugees coming into New Zealand.
you know, it starts off with just the complete shock of not being able to speak the language or really understand, you know, even the social etiquette and things like that. But then as, you know, you learn the language, it still kind of continues to be this challenge of integration into the society. A lot of the challenges that we face, like, you don't expect it or people don't fully understand it. Like I mentioned earlier, it's a lot of the conflict between the two kind of cultures that make it a barrier, you know, to kind of get involved in the current kind of environment that you are in. That makes sense.
I wanted to understand more about the hardships of refugees coming into New Zealand, so I spoke with the manager of English Language Partners Porirua Centre, Jacqueline Wilton. The organization helps those transition into New Zealand when they come from non-English speaking countries.
There's a variety of struggles and challenges, and, you know, there's from the everyday stuff such as getting around to bigger things. And of course, you know, the thing is, while they arrive with challenges, they're all things that can be sorted generally. So one of the big challenges, of course, is culture shock, and it doesn't kick in immediately. Sometimes it's a bit later when, you know, they've got over all the excitement of being safe, or, you know, having followed their dream if they're migrants, but being safe if they're refugees. And, you know, often once that's sort of worn off, there's a feeling of despondence and, you know, realisation that there are so many other challenges to resettlement that can be quite a big thing for former refugees and migrants. You know, challenges like, you know, the bus, catching the bus, food differences can, you know, impact culture shock. Clothing availability, you know, if you're used to different clothing culturally. Schooling systems, that's something that we find can be very challenging, is particularly with adult learners, is that they have expectations of how they should be taught. But, you know, it's all about just cultural differences, and it takes time. Another big one is homesickness. And, you know, sometimes, you know, it's like this is real life. Once again, that doesn't happen immediately, but, you know, once they've gotten over that initial high, it's the reality, particularly with refugees, that this is it. This is my life now and where I live now. And often, you know, they don't have family with them. And, you know, that support can be lacking hugely as far as just that communal, the stuff they used to, family and those sorts of things, which, of course, can lead to the other struggle of isolation, which, you know, can be relatively common. To overcome that, you often see, and I guess something that people comment on is, you know, why are refugees put together in communities of, you know, people from like countries and areas or regions, and that's to develop that sense of support for each other while, you know, going through the integration process with the host community.
I then wanted to know more about the government's role in helping refugees transition. Brooke Scheifra was concerned about refugees after their initial introduction.
I'm aware that there is some support when refugee families first arrive, but after the first few months, I don't think there is much, because people in the government and other organisations, they are aware of the fact that, you know, new arrivals, they require some assistance at first. But once, you know, they have settled you into a home and a living situation, you've got, you know, the initial kind of support. After that, it's kind of assumed that you are now okay, but there is still a bit more work that needs to be done beyond that. And I think there's not a lot of that happening, and that's what makes it kind of has stepped in and tried to, you know, be of help, especially to the young people.
Jacqueline Wilton contrasted this opinion, though, highlighting where government is making big successes.
You know, the government's doing a great job. Could we do? I mean, it doesn't matter what industry you're in, you could say, well, we could do with more. You know, there could always be more, but are they doing a great job? They've, you know, increased the quota. There's a great support service out there. And I just think, you know, they do realise it's a good investment. And they're also looking at getting Kiwis to contribute, which I think is really key. And it happens, you know, there's a lot that the government's doing, but there's also a lot that community organisations and individuals are doing as well. Yeah, we see a lot of that. You know, we have really interesting, I guess, connections and people. Like, you know, I'm not from Porirua originally. I'm from a farming area over in the Wairarapa, and the people over there that know me said, oh, you know, what can we do? We're over here. What can we do? And they just started donating stuff. And so we've been able to run what we call a filler bag, you know, with all, we have so much stuff donated, carloads and carloads, that we set it all out in a hall, and the learners paid $1 and they could fill as many bags as they wanted with stuff they needed. So, you know, a lot of them were a little bit cold, so they were able to get extra blankets. It was bedding, there was kitchen stuff, small household items, heaters, and clothing, incredible. So, you know, in that way, it was a win-win because the learners contributed $1 and got a, you know, that feeling of contribution is really important, and were able to stock up on stuff, and we raised a little bit of fund as well. So that was perfect. You know, so there's lots of that sort of thing going on. Church groups and other organisations, they help allow us to hold our classes in their premises at very, very low rates. Some are completely free. It's like, no, this is our contribution. So while the government is doing a lot, the community is also doing a lot, you know. It's wonderful.
CEO of Refugees as Survivors New Zealand was much more critical of government's role and hoped New Zealanders would be more tolerant of refugees.
Well, I think New Zealand does have an excellent refugee resettlement program. I think many of the providers within that sector, small NGOs, and are dependent on scrounging funding, and I think that's the biggest hurdle that most of us face in terms of providing service. We're all very willing, but we are limited by resources, so I think that is a serious issue that does need to be considered.
Did you have any further comments you wanted to make?
I think the challenging thing from a refugee background is balancing the inevitable trauma that many people have experienced with the incredible resilience that they show. You know, they're expressing fairly normal reactions to very abnormal experiences. And I think for New Zealanders to really grasp that and understand that is what will make the biggest difference. There's a lot of stigma for young people about calling themselves refugee. They don't want to be regarded as a refugee once they're here. They've come here to start a new life and to be a New Zealander. So I think getting those sorts of, trying to understand and unpick those things is really essential.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.